Welcome to Impact Audio. I'm Sam Kaplan, Vice President of Social Impact at Submittable. Last month, I was in DC for the annual National Grants Management Association Conference. More than 1,800 grants professionals came together to look back at what was a really tumultuous year and to share some strategies for moving forward. Where last year's conference took place in the midst of huge disruptions at the federal level, this year's event felt more like the dust had settled. Today, I sit down with my colleague Ian Witthoff to chat about what we heard in DC and what it might mean for the year ahead. Ian Witthoff, welcome back to Impact Audio, my friend. It's good to have you again.
It's good to be here, Sam. And I say it's been a long time, but I see you almost every day. So excited to be here, though.
This is pretty much no different than the rest of our time together at work. So we're going to be talking about the National Grant Management Association's annual grants training. And that is a huge mouthful. But it's a conference that we attend every year, Submittable sponsors every year. It's focused on government grant making. And all of the incredible like nuance associated with that and all of the many changes that are taking place across the government grant making space. We'll dive right into it. But how about a super quick introduction? So I know who you are, but tell everybody else in case they haven't heard of you before.
Sure. Well, Ian Witthoff, Director of Solutions Engineering here in Submittable. And that's a very fancy title for consultant. I really help guide our clients through the process of managing their grants, using our platforms, learning best practices, coming up on my 10-year anniversary this year. I wonder if I get a watch or something. Who knows? But
Rolex is in the mail.
There we go. But I get to talk to our clients every day. I get to go to a lot of the same conferences with Sam and spend a ton of time with our government organizations every day.
So, yeah, I was going to say, like, you have tons of knowledge about grant making and in every part of the sector, but I think you have a real like warm spot for government grant making.
I do. And I think it kind of happened by accident. I just started working with a lot of our government clients over the years and got very interested in what's not always a very interesting topic, but it's gotten a lot more interesting over the past few years, to say the very least.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Over the last 12 months, without a doubt, it has become a really interesting place to work and to make grants. So, so we'll give our impressions and we'll talk a little bit about NGMA 2026. But before we do that, so you actually arrived in Washington, D.C. a couple of days early and participated in the organization's GMBOC, which is their Grants Management. Give me the whole acronym here.
Grants Management Body of Knowledge. You've got it. And that's a mouthful right there too.
and so this was a training session, right? So NGMA publishes this body of knowledge about government grant making, and you can actually get like a professional certification from NGMA in this body of knowledge, right?
So the broader certification is called a Certified Grants Management Specialist. The Grants Management Body of Knowledge, while it's not a full prerequisite, it sets you up for taking that certification test. And it basically encompasses all of what we call in the biz uniform guidance, or for those who aren't as tuned into the government grants management, this is the federal U.S. code CFR 200, which basically is the regulations around how federal money is managed from the feds and various agencies to the states, et cetera. And they even give you a really nice book that you spend the entire time going through. Yes, a physical book in 2026, which is amazing. But it was over the course of 2 days, almost 14 hours. Actually, I think it was just 14 hours of intense, full life cycle grants management training and regulation case study. This was led by lawyers. Actually, the two lawyers from the Broomring Group who helped write it ran the training as well. So just a really, really amazingly intense body of knowledge, to use that term again, to ingest and learn about in a couple of days.
Yeah.
But you know, there were almost 200 people in attendance there. And actually, I even ran into some of our customers, which was exciting. Happened to be sitting at the
That's
table
cool.
on day two with a couple of our clients, which was really cool.
Well, look, on behalf of all of your coworkers at Submittable, super excited that you committed those 14 hours. Like, this is one of the things that I think really enables Submittable and our platform to stand apart is that, you know, we have guys like you that will really invest the time and the brain power into understanding, you know, this body of knowledge and uniform guidance and all of the, you know, incredible detail around government grant making to ensure that we're serving our customers in the absolute best way possible. So, all right, let's dive right into NGMA 2026. We were both at the conference last year. We were there again this year. Like, what stood out to you? What was your overall impression of the conference this year?
A little bit of a different feel this year. I think last year everyone was reacting, right, to everything that was going on and changing in Washington at the beginning of the new administration. It's not that we're living without change. I think the change is constant and is actually accelerating, but we're maybe better prepared for it. You could definitely tell that the group is digging in. I mean, there were 1,800 grants management professionals there, and everyone is really digging into the kind of core areas that they need to, especially with all of the change that's happening, for
Yeah.
sure.
Well, I'm going to piggyback on that a little bit and probably be a little more direct and say that my impression last year was that the conference, as amazing as it always is, it just felt so chaotic. You know, the new federal administration had not been in place for very long, and there were executive orders happening on a near daily basis that were impacting, you know, all of the agencies that make grants. And there were so many people at the conference that, you know, were discovering that their programs had been significantly impacted or even canceled. And a lot of people, frankly, like, you know, didn't even show up to the conference last year, because they were, you know, they were either super busy trying to figure out how their work needed to adapt to the new regulations, or they were out of a job. And so for me, the biggest change in 2025 and 2026 was that all of these grants professionals had an opportunity to spend several months really figuring out what those changes mean to the industry and to their agencies and to the work, and to your point, how to appropriately react to them. And so I left the conference feeling like never have I come across a group of coworkers who are more resilient in their values and in their day-to-day work than government grant makers. So, my goodness, they had a lot to react to over that last year, didn't they?
They did. I mean, there's so many changes that have happened now in the last year. It's almost we maybe got used to the change a little bit, if that makes any sense. Because not that the change has gone away. If anything,
Right.
different areas are accelerating, right? Different agencies are reprioritizing funding, reprioritizing where resources are going. And so, you know, if I think about the attendees of AGT, a lot of them are the pass-through entities at the state level. They're the colleges, universities, higher ed who are receiving research funding. They're the organizations who are the boots on the ground, doing the work in the states and in the local government. And so for a lot of them, it's now they've sort of begun to understand, all right, this is the new fu grants funding kind of paradigm that they're living in. And now where do we need to take the next step? And I think what's interesting to me, and a big takeaway, and this is interesting to say this, outcomes are non-negotiable. In kind of the new paradigm, there's so much conversation about just demonstrating measurable impact. It has to be foundational. And I heard a lot of folks talk about that, whether it was in sessions, you know, at the booth, just in general conversation. So I think that's another really kind of key piece of this, Sam, as well. The maybe the noise has settled down a bit. Now, as we're digging into what's coming next, it's outcomes, outcomes, outcomes.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, you really hit the nail on the head there, Ian. And for me, like I spend a lot of time sort of working on both sides of the aisle, whether it's government grant making or private foundations or corporate giving. And for a long time, my impression about the government space was that it was not as concerned about outcomes as much as other areas of philanthropy. It was much more about compliance and audits and collecting the right documentation and subrecipient monitoring and sort of all of the actual day-to-day work of like managing those federal dollars. But you're completely right that this year, like every keynote session, most of the breakout sessions that I went into, they talked about how critical it was to be able to measure and talk about the outcomes of all of this work. So that was for me super refreshing to hear. And it was also really timely because over the last couple of months, we here at Summitable have been working on something that we call taxpayer ROI. And it's really a framework that's designed to help government grant makers and agencies demonstrate the impact of that work and the outcomes, and to show that ultimately they are providing this financial return back to the taxpayers with all of the work that they're doing.
Yeah, the shift's interesting. I think you bring up a great point around compliance. Compliance didn't go away, right? Actually, I think they're doubling down into compliance, but now it's compliance to make sure that you followed the regulations, you had the right allowable costs, you're using the new indirect cost rate the right way, et cetera. But then it's on the other side of it saying, but what did you do with that money? What did you do with the funding? What happened? And I think a lot about these subrecipient relationships, because that's where we see this a lot, right? When we work with a state agency, they're working with subrecipients. They're working with the local agencies, et cetera, and nonprofit implementation partners. And I think for a long time, it was all reactive, very compliance heavy, very siloed. I think a big shift, or maybe even a seismic shift towards more of this, dare I call it, a service first relationship base with the agencies at the state level, especially, changing their approach to monitoring, changing their approach to being more collaborative, offering more technical assistance, capacity building over like the kind of punitive gotcha compliance pieces.
Yeah.
Where have we heard this before, Sam?
Oh my gosh. You tell me.
I think across all of philanthropy for the last decade, we've heard this. So it's interesting kind of seeing those two marry up, but we can't lose the oversight
Right.
piece. You can't I can't open the Philadelphia Inquirer without reading something about a waste, fraud, and abuse case happening here locally in the Philly area. Or you've got other kind of states. You hear Minnesota, Los Angeles, et cetera. The compliance doesn't go away, but it's now more of a marriage of compliance, outcomes, taxpayer ROI, all those things kind of coming
Right.
together.
Yeah. All right. So speaking of compliance, I jotted down a couple of the things that I learned while I was at NGMA this year. So, and I'll give you just a couple of them. So the first is Executive Order 14332. This is introducing contract terminations for convenience and limits on indirect costs. So expect this to make its way into uniform guidance. And at the State of Grants panel, they had warned us, a uniform guidance update can drop at any time here. So I don't know if you know anything more, Ian, about when it's actually going to happen, but pay attention for language around Executive Order 14332 and that contract termination. Another Executive Order 14192. This is a super interesting one. This is going to require that whenever an agency proposes or finalizes a new regulation, it has to identify at least 10 existing regulations to be repealed. So there was a lot of speculation in the many sessions I was in around what does this actually mean for uniform guidance? So if you introduce a new rule, do you have to remove 10 rules out there? The idea behind all of this is to enforce deregulation as much as possible. So, totally understand that, but it's going to be really, really interesting to see how Executive Order 14192 actually plays out when it comes to all of this work that government grant makers are doing. And then lastly, get ready for a SAM.gov update. So Executive Order 14173, along with DOJ guidance, is going to add 3 new attestations related to DEI practices, immigration, and terrorism and public safety. And so state and local agencies are going to be on the hook to ensure that their subgrantees are not in violation of those 3 attestations at the risk of criminal penalties, which I have never heard of before in government grant making. So lots of changes that were being talked about. Those were some ones that jumped to mind for me, Ian. Any like big trends aside from the taxpayer ROI and the outcomes that you caught on to over the course of the week?
We are going to see some changes to uniform guidance. It's already circulating in some of the agencies. Yeah. I think it's no one exactly knows when that's going to drop. There should be a public commentary period once it does come out. How fast it gets implemented is a whole other story. If we look at the 2024 changes, those changes sat in draft for almost 18 months for commentary before they went into effect. I think that's going to change a bit. More scrutiny with indirect cost rate is going to be happening kind of across the board. The executive order that you quoted is very much driving that change. I think you're seeing a lot of that in the headlines, especially around research grants and the like. How much that gets codified, back to the last executive order you're referring to, for every one regulation, you have to cut 10. If you look at uniform guidance in its totality, it is one giant regulation, but it's not the only regulation. So when you're receiving a federal grant or you're functioning as a pass-through entity, there are lots of other matters of law that come into effect on how that grant gets managed. And if there's ever a contradiction, you're supposed to refer back to uniform guidance to iron out where that contradiction is. And so some of the question gets to be, well, if we're not making huge changes to uniform guidance, but agency regulations are changing, do you still refer back? And so there's a lot of questions. And I think just as everybody, I'm going to pull up my favorite sticker here. Everybody always says in every session you go to, it depends, right? And I do wonder if there's going to be a degree of more it depends, right? With those regulations. I think one I area. Yeah. Sorry.
No, I'm just agreeing with you. I think that, there was so much good guidance in terms of like, there's a lot of uncertainty. It all depends. Like, work with your lawyers, talk with your auditors, try to figure out the most reasonable, rational approach to many of these changes that have not yet, made their way from an executive order into an actual rule book like uniform guidance. And it just feels like everybody right now is really just trying their best to do the right thing. And at the same time, so many of us are doing things in slightly different ways because it hasn't been codified yet.
No, 100%. And what I hear every lawyer, every grants management professional say is talk to your peers, refer back to uniform guidance, go talk to, your federal agency that you're working with and get guidance. I think there's more collaboration now than I think there has been in the past. And it's a good thing. I think it's sort of being forced in a certain extent because it's not all as black and white maybe as it once was, which is forcing folks to really reach out cross agencies, interagency, nonprofit implementation partners are spending a lot more time working with their state entities to really make sure that they're in alignment with that what that compliance looks like, which I think is a big change. And because you don't want to, that termination for convenience is so new and is still, I mean, we're still watching it go into the courts, right? Every time there's a termination for convenience, it goes to a court. It goes to a, some sort of legal discussion on whether or not that was possible. So I think we'll see more of that. And we'll see that too, probably when uniform guidance gets updated, if that becomes codified in there.
For sure. And it was interesting. Several of the keynote speakers talked about this process where, something comes out and then it gets challenged in court, or a federal judge somewhere decides to put the brakes on. And, it really all just creates more confusion and a little bit of chaos in the process here. I'm very hopeful. I'm sure you and everybody else are, that eventually all this gets figured out. We can all go back to like operating from the same sheet of music. Ian, I had a couple of favorite sessions and I was going to tell you about them real quick. And then if you had a favorite one, I'd love to hear about it as well. So,
Sure.
the first one that I was really kind of enamored with here was called Grants Management: More Than Just Money, It's Relationships. And this was hosted by Tuanisha Glass from the State of Michigan Division of Victim Services. And I think this is like one of the few sessions that I attended that touched on something other than that, like end-to-end grant management process, or really going deep into a part of uniform guidance. And I particularly liked this one because I think it's always nice when, especially in the government grant making space, that we raise up a little bit from uniform guidance and remember that this is a very relationship and people-driven business that we work in. And Tuanisha talked a lot about that. She said that she got into this work because she wanted to have a career that really meant something. She wanted to know that she was helping people out with the work that she was doing. So this very sort of like human aspect. She talked about how like the human experience in all of the work tends to get forgotten, and that we tend to focus on again that rule book and like audits and monitoring our subrecipients, all of the technical work of grants management. But I really think that she struck a note with me, and that she made sure that everybody in the room was really like thinking about how we invest into relationships with our coworkers and stakeholders and partners in all of this government grant making work. I'll pause. Did you have a favorite one?
I didn't have one single favorite one, but I had a series of them. And maybe this is the kind of tech geek nerd in me standing out a little bit. But there were several sessions that talked about AI, talked about breaking down data silos, managing data reporting. You can't be audit ready. You can't be able to justify and defend your grant funding if you don't have the stories, you don't have the data to back that up. And there's so much happening now, and there's so much scrutiny that you need to be able to have all that data coming in. I saw I forget the agency right now, but in the state of Maryland, I believe it's part of the Department of Justice, has taken all of their grants data and fed it into Power BI. And now we're able to tell a story that goes over the course of multiple years of the benefits of the grant funding that they've received in the state, that they've subgranted to different organizations, and what's happened as a result. AI was all over some of the sessions I was going to, and I don't mean people using awful AI slides. Although there was a couple of funny examples that they used in one of the keynotes, but there was one consultant who really spent the entire session digging in to how AI can help monitor subrecipients and grantees. And it wasn't about replacing the human in the loop. It was about giving us more tools, because one of the big themes I heard in almost every session is we need to do more with less. We need to do more with less. And so I see government is no longer just kind of dipping its toe into AI, but is sort of maybe in that proof of concept phase and is going to accelerate from here. And that was
Right.
clear just by, I mean, I attended four sessions on AI this year. Last year, I think I attended one. So
Yeah.
a lot more prevalent for sure.
Man, I'm with you. One of the sessions that I went to was called Understanding Changing Technology, and it was hosted by Andrew Holzer. And admittedly, like I went into this one thinking I might not get a whole lot out of it because, you and I and our coworkers, like we focus on technology and grant making and that intersection all day, every day. But I was really kind of pleasantly surprised by this session. So it was set up as a roundtable discussion, meaning that, Andrew had certain topics, to start on really as conversation starters for all of the people in the room. And there was just a ton of open dialogue with all of the attendees in there. It was mostly about AI. I think he touched on blockchain a little bit and, a couple other technologies, but it was 90% AI. One person had talked about building a tracking system to help answer questions about their grants and their processes. Somebody else had raised this great question. Like they asked if anybody in the room had tried to build a grants management system like Vibe Code One with AI. I think maybe in a bid for self-preservation here, I was very happy that everybody in the room was like, no, that seems like a bridge too far. But there were so many examples of people building agents and tools using Claude and the other LLMs that are out there. It was just really exciting to have this session where everybody was describing how they're using AI and really asking a lot of hard questions about it. So, there was a reference to how the administration had used AI to scour grant applications looking for certain keywords. Like that's been a long reported story out there over the last year. But somebody had mentioned that like a grant was at least temporarily canceled because there was a reference to gender in this grant. Well, it ended up that the grant was doing research on a certain species of birds in a particular area. And so it got reinstated, but they talked about that as a great example of how AI can actually cause harm in this process of grant making that we're doing.
Yeah, I heard that a lot. The session that I attended was intelligent oversight. So it was about using AI to strengthen monitoring compliance. And Dane Harrington and Chris and Gary from Ignite Consulting were going through the different use cases there. And they brought up like the hallucination piece, right? Like also that sometimes the AI doesn't actually fully grasp the concept. And that's why you need the human in the loop. I think that's a big takeaway from me that just heard over and over again that I mean, we had that as part of our AI kind of policies and thoughts around that is that we're not trying to replace humans. You still need that human to look at that information to determine, hey, was this actually out of compliance? Is there actually an issue here? So I think the more technology we can use, the better. And this may be a controversial statement, Sam, but I've always believed government's about 10 years behind the curve in most technology. I think because of all the accelerated change over the last year, I can't say 10 years anymore. I think it's rapidly catching up because of just all the changes happening.
I agree with you, Ian. In many ways, I feel like in government grant making, in some ways, they're now beginning to lead the sector in terms of novel uses of technology. And I'll tell you what, hopefully AI is never used to replace solutions engineers or podcast hosts at Submittable. This has been a ton of fun, man. Thank you so much for hanging out with me at the conference, for taking us out to dinner. And for joining me here on this recap, I've had a great time with you and appreciate all your insights. And look, we'll do this again next year, if not sooner.
My pleasure, Sam. Always appreciate talking to the audience. Take care.
I want to send a big thank you to everyone behind the scenes at NGMA who helped put this conference together. It was such an incredible opportunity to learn from so many people across the sector, and as always, I'm blown away by how thoughtful, connected, and fearless this group of grant makers is. That's all for me today. Thanks for tuning in to Impact Audio, produced by your friends at Submittable. Until next time.